Welcome to Journeys to Orthodoxy, a production of the Icon New Media Network, where Orthodox Christianity is the future of American spirituality. Journeys to Orthodoxy can be heard on the Orthodox Christian Network at www.myocn.net. I'm your host, Jacob Lee.
This week on Journeys, Deacon David Fabula.
Welcome to Journeys to Orthodoxy. I'm your host, Jacob Lee, and I am joined today by Deacon David Fabula. I'm actually sitting in his living room by the wood-burning stove in lovely Delta, Colorado. Is this Delta?
This is
still
Delta. Yes.
Okay. And as I look out the window, there is a field with snow, and it's cold out there. I'm not sure how cold, but
well,
it's...
The high today is 32 degrees right now.
Oh, wow.
It was 6.
And as most listeners know, that I'm from California, so, you know, we don't normally see anything below 40. So this is a new experience for me in a lot of ways. So anyhow, let's get on to Deacon David here. Deacon is the deacon at St. Andrew's
Orthodox Church in Delta, Colorado.
And you've been a deacon there for?
I've been there 16 years. I've been a deacon 20 years, and originally was a deacon with the Antiochian Orthodox Church, and 16 years ago moved to the OCA.
Great. And Deacon, how did you grow up? Were you a Protestant, a pagan, a Catholic?
I was raised Roman Catholic. Both my mom and dad were very active Catholics. My dad's brother was a Trappist monk, and so I'd say we were relatively active in the Catholic Church. Went to parochial school for most of my years of schooling, although some years I went to private school that was a non-Catholic school. And a lot of people thought that I should be a priest. Never really pursued that very far because I always thought I wanted to get married. And then when we stopped being Catholic, that kind of solved that problem, and we went on from there.
So your parents were both Catholic, and then what happened that you guys stopped being Catholic?
My mom got pregnant at 40 and was using birth control so she wouldn't get pregnant at 45, and the Pope said if you use birth control, you can't be a Catholic, and so we stopped being Catholic. So I was in sixth grade at the time. You know, it wasn't that we were going all that active. My mom and I mostly went. My younger sisters came once in a while. My dad hardly went to church at the time, so it was an easy step. It was just a good excuse. And then I got involved with some Protestant summer camps because my neighbor was a camp leader. So I started going to Protestant summer camps. First one I went to was a Nazarene church, and then I went to a Covenant church, both in Pasadena. And ultimately, I got involved with Campus Crusade up in Arrowhead Springs.
Okay. And what was it like going from the Catholic Church as a young child to these Protestant groups? I mean, there must have been some sort of difference.
Camp was a lot more fun than the Catholics. Communion was bizarre. I'm sorry, grape juice and a small wafer was just a shock to me. But that's what we did, and, you know, you're in 6th, 7th, 8th grade, and you want to fit in, and it was kind of a shock. You know, in the Catholic Church, you have a lot of statues, and you at least have maybe the Stations of the Cross. So the empty Protestant churches were kind of a shock in the sense that the walls were all plain. But singing songs was fun, and preaching was fun. So, you know.
So it was different.
It was different, but not so different that, you know, I couldn't do it.
So it was especially as a child, a doable transition.
Sure.
And now you said you got involved with Campus Crusade. Was that in college that
No, I got originally got involved in Campus Crusade because the Covenant Church I was going to was very close to Arrowhead Springs.
Okay.
And so we got to use it for summer camps and then very easily transitioned into some of the older things as we got into high school.
So that was up at the old hotel?
Up in the old hotel, yes. Right.
The Black Rock Bottom Pool.
And yes. I got baptized there twice. So.
Okay. Yeah. As a child, I used to go fishing in the little pond they had there. My grandfather had access to the grounds. And so I know that place quite well. So you're in the Campus Crusade realm. And what did you do in Campus Crusade after you've been baptized twice?
Basically, I came home one day and told my dad I was a Christian. And he kind of was shocked, and we didn't have a whole lot to talk about for a while. And, I got baptized as a kid in the Catholic Church and got sprinkled, and I had a godfather. But, when you're in sixth grade, that doesn't mean a whole lot, even if you're, you get told that. But mainly I went for the youth activities, and that was it. Not having parents involved, and not really having a way to any activity other than through my neighbor. That's what I went to.
Okay. So. And in your you go through high school and into college. What is that?
So in the last three years of high school, I went to a Christian Brothers school in Sierra Madre, or actually it's in Pasadena, right next to Sierra Madre. So I went to an all-boys high school in 10th grade, and then when we moved to San Diego, I went to San Diego University High School, and that was a co-ed high school, both Catholics. Catholic run, but the Catholic school in San Diego was less run by the Jesuits, and it was had more. We had some nuns and some brothers for teachers, but not all our nuns and teachers. So, basically, after graduating high school, I went to University of Santa Cruz, and that's where I got involved in Campus Crusade again there. So the kind of last 2 years of high school was a break.
Got it. And being involved in Campus Crusade on the campus, was it you were just involved in the Bible studies that Campus Crusade provided? Or
It was too new at the time. Basically, there was a few house churches that were trying to get involved in a Bible study. I ended up in a house church in Branson 40, and then after that, that house church ended up as a house church in Ben Lomond. And, the house churches kind of grew and shrank, and new people came and went. At one point, I lived on a ranch up in Branson 40. And so it just kind of molded into it. It wasn't anything really formal on campus yet. That was our goal, but it just hadn't gotten there in the 70s, so.
And then you became more involved in church. Is that correct?
Yeah.
In becoming
basically once I stopped going to college, I got involved living on the ranch, and then living on the ranch, we were doing Christian community things at the time. We were discussing the early Church of Acts and what was the Church of Acts. We didn't necessarily really want to go join the local Baptist church or the local Assembly of God church. That was kind of something that, being one of the few Catholics in the group didn't really matter to me one way or the other. So ultimately, the leadership got involved with more of the other men that had gone through Campus Crusade. And as a group, they joined together and started Christian Community.
Got it. And were you married at this point, or did
no,
you...
single.
Single?
So got married in 1977. I think by then we were doing evangelical Orthodox things. We had certainly looked into the early church. We had decided that the early church was what we wanted to do. I had a girlfriend in high school that was Greek Orthodox, so to me, Orthodoxy meant something, but not enough to say, yes, that's what I want to do. But okay, sure. It's halfway between being a Protestant and a Catholic as far as I was concerned at the moment.
So how did you develop into the evangelical Orthodox? I mean, what was the goal behind that?
I think our church in Ben Lomond was relatively charismatic. It was certainly had a very strong leader, and so it was very easy to be very, very involved. It was just made easy, and since I was living at a ranch that they were trying to turn into some type of community ranch or a place for people that just needed a time outside of the city, you know, I was very involved at that point. You know, and being young enough to say, okay, whatever, today, you know, something new today, it's fine.
And the progression within that kind of sphere, did it become more and more liturgical, or how did...
We started little house churches.
Okay.
So I was made, you know, the bishops of EOC, I think there were 7 or 8 of them in the very beginning. And Weldon Hardenbrook was our bishop. And so I was made a deacon, and I was in one of the small house churches in Mount Hermon, which is a Christian retreat center, non-denominational, but you see a lot of Baptists and a lot of Pentecostals there. So,
and as it progressed, what kind of led you or the folks you were with to look at Orthodoxy?
The way I remember it is basically we were trying to be Orthodox so hard. We put on a Renaissance fair one summer, which I did a lot of work at. And I believe our first real experience with canonical Orthodox was a Greek bishop. And his comment was that if we wanted to play this hard at being Orthodox, we might as well be Orthodox and be canonical. For me, that didn't mean anything. I didn't know what canonical Orthodoxy was or wasn't. Weldon Hardenbrook was enough of a charismatic leader that most of us in the group had followed him for 10 or 15 years already, and if he wanted to become Orthodox, we probably would all do it anyhow. So.
And so you were received into the Antiochian church?
So in the end, what happened was a lot of the local Orthodox parishes didn't want to take us in mass because we were such a large group in ourselves, we'd be overwhelming. You know, we would have, you know, had we joined the local OCA church, the local OCA church maybe had 150 people and we were 700 people. There was a lot of interest in trying to keep our evangelical Orthodox group and our leadership together. And so there was a lot of courting of different bishops or metropolitans and to see who would give us the best accommodation for us as a group, take us in whole, take us in mass. And so Metropolitan Philip took us in mass, didn't know anything about Orthodox baptism. It just never really came up, and I think it was avoided a little bit because we were such a diverse group of people that it would have been a bone of contention. And so he took us as we were, and so it was very easy to become chrismated and a deacon all in the same day.
So at that point you were made a deacon in the...
Right, so in 87, February of 87, we joined the Antiochian Archdiocese, and we were the AEOM, and I'd have to think hard just remember what that stands for, but American Evangelical Orthodox Mission, I believe, is what it was. And so Metropolitan Philip at the time had the Western Rite, he had the AEOM, and he had two Antiochian Orthodox groups that were just kind of learning how to remeld into one. So Even his diocese, you know, he was very able to say, hey, if you guys need to do it this way, that's okay. I'll cover it, but let's move towards, here's our goal. So in Ben Lomond, we were very aggressive at trying to be showy, be perfect, be a little better, because we had 700 people. We had a lot of choir members. But looking back, certain Protestant things we kept forever. You know, we sang Protestant songs during communion for years and years and years.
All right. It happens, right?
It happens, right. How do you get 700 people to have communion without having some songs to sing? So,
yeah, I guess some of the communion hymns could get a little bit...
It's been so long now, it's hard, but it's just one of those things you have to laugh at and go, yeah, okay, yeah, we sang Protestant songs, because that's what we all knew, and while we were trying to be Orthodox. Okay, there's a problem.
It happens. So, you became a deacon. Now, did they send you to St. Stephen's course or anything?
Nope. In Ben Lomond, we had 25 deacons and 22 priests.
Wow.
So we were, at the time, a collection of churches. We were the Church of Santa Cruz. We were the church in the San Lorenzo Valley. A church from San Jose had come over. A church from Reno had come over. I think we even had some down from Lompoc, of some priests. And again, you know, here you have men and women and families who, you know, were very active in very small house churches and were therefore willing, once asked by Metropolitan Philip, are you willing to be a priest or a deacon? They said yes, because their experience in the house churches had been such, oh, yeah, I can do that. And so that was my case. You know, I had been a deacon in a house church in the EOC for 5 to 8 years. And so the idea of serving at liturgy wasn't scary. Like I said, the idea of being canonical Orthodox was...
you could have gone one way or another.
I could have gone one way or the other. You know, not that it wasn't meaningless. I could see it as an improvement, but what that meant, I didn't know. So I think the best way to say it is I like serving as a deacon, and so I was very... privileged to be asked, and I very quickly said yes. So the joke was I was the deacon of the air conditioner, though, because I didn't have the best voice, and there was so many other people to choose from. So mostly I worked on the air conditioner. There was other deacons that wanted to work on the sound system. There was other deacons that wanted to work on the child care, and our definition of a deacon was not liturgical. You know, a deacon was a servant to do whatever. My job was the air conditioner because it always got hot.
So what, I mean, now in seeing you on Sunday, you're not the deacon of the air conditioner right anymore. So how did that transition take place?
So I stayed in the Antiochian Archdiocese about 5 years. 1 year, my wife and I and my three boys, which were 8 and under, we got asked to consider moving up to Lake Shasta and starting a ranch. Again, it was going to be a retreat center, mostly for men, probably for priests and their families. And so we moved up one summer, stayed for a month, and my wife said, my gosh, I want to live in the country. It's quiet. I want animals. We've always had horses and goats, and we just never had a big ranch. You know, we had 2 acres. And so all of a sudden that got the urge going of, hey, Santa Cruz is changing. It's not the community it was when we first moved here. What do we want to do? And it didn't look like the best of places to raise boys, you know, especially when you had 3 in a row. So that made us start looking. Then I started getting sick every winter. And 1 year I was sick for 6 months. And doing construction and crawling underneath basements, I would get an allergy in my sinuses. I get a sinus infection. And the wet climate, you know, Santa Cruz, it rains 100 inches a year. If it rains 60 inches a year, it's a drought. If it rains 160 inches a year, it's a, you know, we flood, but it's always raining. And so finally my doctor said, you know, you really need to move. You need to go somewhere drier, potentially higher, and let's see if we can get you over this, because he'd given me every kind of antibiotic he could and nothing was killing it. So with that, and being the deacon of the air conditioner and having three boys that I were hoping to serve in the altar and seeing 50 other boys, my boys' ages, I kind of thought, you know, if I went somewhere where there wasn't as much competition, I could be a liturgical deacon and I'd learn. So I originally went to Saratoga, to St. Nicholas Church there. Father Basil Rhodes was my priest, and he said, I was a deacon 20 minutes. Then they made me a priest. I can train you, no problem.
So you get your training there?
I got my training there, you know, and he would some Sundays, he would say, when I'm doing this, what are you doing? I don't know, I'm standing over in their corner. Oh, that's probably not where you're supposed to be. You better go do this. But after a year of doing that, we came across Delta and realized that, you know, an Orthodox church in the country is rare. At this, you know, 15 years ago, you could find an Orthodox church in downtown Denver. You can find an Orthodox church in downtown L.A. I got invited to be the deacon at St. Nicholas in San Francisco. I got invited to be the deacon in Ironwood, Montana. But at some point, this was the right place, you know. I looked into joining the Russian Church abroad and decided I wasn't quite Russian enough, and I looked into joining the Greek Archdiocese and decided I wasn't Greek enough, and came here, and it was a small church of 35 people. Everybody was a convert, and Father Daniel had been a deacon for 5 years, and I thought, hey, here's a way to serve a priest that's been a deacon a long time. And so that's where most of my trainings actually come from, Father Daniel here at Delta.
Great. And so you were motivated basically out of health reasons to move to Delta.
Right.
And you've seen your parish grow?
Yes. I think the interesting thing that I learned here, and I've been to Mount Athos 3 times, and Mount Athos pointed it out to me, is that every church, every monastery, every group has a personality. And there's nothing wrong with that personality. It is what it is. Father Daniel is very different from the previous priest before him, Father Timothy Lowe. It was a shock to a lot of the parishioners at first, in the sense that, you know, everybody thought that every priest was going to be the same, and that would have been my guess. Oh, you know, they're all the same. This is the way it's going to be. But once you realize that, you know, there's nothing wrong with going to the Greek church in Grand Junction if that meets your needs better. And there's nothing wrong with coming to the point of realizing that, you know, the things in Delta meet my needs better, and come where you fit. So the parish has grown slowly, but because we, you know, as in the EOC, we wanted to make everybody American Orthodox, and we wanted to come up with a perfect stamp. We wanted to come up with the right method. And finally I realized that, you know, there is no right method. There's just what God brings you. And so now at St. Andrew's, we are getting close to 75 to 80 people. We have lots of little kids. But the first years, my kids included, they all grew up, went to high school, went away to college, and didn't come back. And so it wasn't until father's kids got married and started having little babies that anybody was even brave enough to walk into St. Andrew's with a screaming little kid. Because otherwise, nobody wanted to be the first person with the first baby. But when it was Father Daniel's granddaughter, it was okay. So, you know, it's just, I think it's a transition of a parish, you know. We used to have nuns come, and I think we had a very solemn and quiet service, and we did. Now they come and say, oh, you guys got lots of kids. And they're not upset, you know, so.
Well, I think that's kind of the beauty of being Orthodox, is that the kids are a part of the service. Mm-hmm. I know as a Protestant, you know, we wanted to run them out on a rail as quick as mm-hmm. we possibly could.
In our EOC days and my early Antiochian days, we had so many kids, they had church school all the time. And so the kids only came in for communion. When the kids got bigger, the church was so crowded that my son Nicholas made this comment when we first went to Saratoga. And so we went to Saratoga, and it's a very small church. It has very dark walls. The icons are very small. There's very little light in the church compared to St. Peter and St. Paul's. And we asked Nicholas, well, what did you think? What was different? And he said, well, you know, the guy that stood up in the middle of the church, I liked him. And we said, what? Well, what happened was Father Basil Rhodes made all the kids come up for homily and sit on the ground. And then the bigger kids were the next rows, and the bigger kids and the adults were all in the back. For Nicholas, at St. Peter and St. Paul's, the homily was mic'd. It was very loud. Everybody stood up. He couldn't tell that there was somebody in it speaking because he was in a crowd of standing adults. And his comment was, you know, the guy in St. Peter and St. Paul's is always yelling. Well, yeah, he was, because we put him on a mic, you know, and so he liked the smaller, more intimate feeling instantly, and it made us realize, okay, we have some things we can do. So,
now, how has it been for your family here in Delta?
In changing location, you have to be willing to change everything. A lot of my friends, especially the deacons that I knew in Ben Lomond, said, how come you're willing to start over? And basically, I had moved a lot as a child, and so I was willing to start over, and I didn't find that as a problem. Mainly, we motivate ourselves with starting over is that Delta was 10 years behind the times. And Janet and I thought, hey, we could use a little less activity to raise our family and say that's a good thing. And yes, whatever would be different. But we got to do 4-H things. We did bowling things. You know, we learned to be farmers.
Now, your parish is basically kind of isolated. We've said it's a rural parish. Mm-hmm. How have people, in your opinion, been finding the parish?
Well, let's see. The newest way is to marry somebody. So we've had a number of our teens grow up, go to college, come back, get a job, and get married to non-Orthodox. It's been very surprising to see that it's very easy for somebody who hasn't been raised in a very strict Christian church, however, you know, semi-Christian, how easy it is for them to become Orthodox. You know, they basically have none of the hurdles. We realize that in Delta, if you go to the Presbyterian church, you might have your grandmother, your grandfather, you have all your aunts and uncles, you certainly have your parents there. And so to leave the Presbyterian church and marry somebody that's Orthodox is a hard hurdle. But if your family doesn't really go to church anywhere, then it's an easy jump. The other silly thing that happens is Delta has been a small enough community 10, 15 years ago that when new people came into town, if they went around to every church in town, very quickly they could try out the Baptist or they could try out the Assembly of God. And they didn't even know they were trying out an Orthodox church, but somebody said, oh, go up there to St. Andrew's, go try St. Andrew's, you know. And they would come in, and they didn't stay the first time. They usually went away, and the Showalters some of our best friends. Basically, it took another year for them to finally say, okay, we've tried everywhere else. We know this is where we belong. Okay, we're here again. So that's how we've gotten. And then Orthodox coming from California, you know, people who've been looking into Orthodoxy. What I think is the funniest thing is to meet people who have left Delta, gone somewhere else, become Orthodox, and have them come back 20 years later and say, what? There's an Orthodox church in Delta? How did that happen? You know.
And it was here while they were living here.
No, it wasn't here while No. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just one of those things.
Yeah. Wow. So what has changed in your life since you've become Orthodox?
I feel I have a more rounded view of my Christianity. I certainly have become more of a merciful person. As a Catholic, it was too easy to say, if you're not in communion with the Pope, you're going to hell. And now, as an Orthodox person, I have to say, no, I just want to know the teachings of Christ and the Fathers, and I'll leave salvation up to God, and I don't try and judge that as much anymore. Having been in the Protestant churches where we moved into Orthodoxy, we became very self-centered. And if you weren't in our group, maybe, you know, you were questionable. So that we just had the Nativity, and so we sang the song, and I'm not sure the name of the song other than Christ is with us. Christ is with us. Anyhow, basically, one line is you know, glorify Him. And in my previous years, when I sang Christ is with us, I meant Christ is with this one group, and the rest of them were kind of questionable, you know. Now I don't have that, you know. Orthodoxy has helped me over that. So,
yeah, Christ is with all of humanity,
right,
because of
right.
His incarnation. So, Deacon, since you didn't go to seminary and you've got your training from your local priest, that's kind of... I guess in a lot of people's mind, you might say limits you to what you can do in the church. And how are you feeling or about that? I don't like the.
That's right. That's basically. I think that in becoming a deacon and then in becoming a more active liturgical deacon, meaning a deacon that really serves the altar every Sunday, I've come to realize that I like being a deacon. I have no interest in becoming a priest. If my bishop were to ask me and really put me to the test, you know, I would consider it. But as far as my desire for my own future, I hope I can be a deacon for the rest of my life. Getting to serve at the altar is enough training. To have a priest that served as a deacon is an excellent opportunity to have the bishop come through and to have once in a while to have a deacon course helps me find things that I'm doing wrong or I could improve or, you know, change a little bit. But I think the main thing that I found is I just really like being a deacon. And I think that in the past, the need for priests was so great that men went to seminary, became a deacon, and then very quickly became a priest because the need for the priest was so great. And so the tradition of having a deacon who's going to be a deacon all his life and serve St. Andrew's forever is something that most people thought, well, he won't be here very long. The bishop will make him a priest. He wants to move to a bigger parish. And none of those things are true for me. So, not having gone to seminary does not seem to be a disadvantage. Yes, my education as far as wanting to be a priest one day would be lacking, but I would go to seminary if I wanted to be a priest.
And that's also opened you up to just being free to serve and not consider whether you're going to get snatched and taken away to be a priest somewhere.
I'm attached to St. Andrews. That means that I have to support myself. I get a small stipend from the church, but basically I'm self-supporting, and I'm not Father Daniel's deacon, meaning that if he were to move, he doesn't get to move me with him. I believe that St. Andrew came to my family relatives because I have Romanians and Poles and Russians and Slovaks in them. And so I'm very happy to be at St. Andrew's and say, here's my heritage. My dad's name was Andrew. My grandfather's name was Andrew. My great-great-great-grandfather's name was Andrew. So lots of Andrews on my side of the family.
Well, great. Well, Deacon, I want to thank you for joining me today on Journeys to Orthodoxy.
Thank you for listening to Journeys to Orthodoxy, a production of the Icon New Media Network, where Orthodox Christianity is the future of American spirituality. Would you like to share your journey with us? Please do so by contacting us at journeys@iconnewmedianetwork.com. Journeys to Orthodoxy can be heard on the Orthodox Christian Network at www.myocn.net.